disclosures. Good morning. Thanks so much for being here bright and early. I flew in from Los Angeles yesterday, so my body is very confused. I'll be presenting some pilot work that my colleagues and I have conducted on social networks and depression and treatment adherence among HIV-positive men in Los Angeles. I want to acknowledge my co-author, Diane Tan, who's here, as well as the other contributors to this paper. Men who have sex with men represent approximately 2% of the U.S. population, yet they account for nearly 60% of all people living with HIV in the U.S. MSM have higher rates of health and mental health issues compared to their heterosexual counterparts. And among HIV-positive individuals, studies report that as many as 36% meet criteria for clinical depression. So depression among HIV-positive individuals is an important area of study, and many HIV-positive individuals belong to this group of MSM. If we think about the treatment cascade and what it looks like, particularly for men who have sex with men, we see that we have a long way to go to reach the UNAIDS goal of 90-90-90 by 2020. So viral suppression is under 50% among MSM in the U.S. And viral suppression is important, as we know, because it is related to improved health outcomes for individuals, but also reduced chances of transmission in the community. So treatment is prevention, as is so often said. Just to give a little bit of background on social support and why studying social networks are important when thinking about depression and HIV medication adherence, greater social support has been linked to better adherence and better mental health outcomes, and the structure and composition of social networks influence the quality and type of social support that can be gained. There have been social support interventions that have improved health outcomes for HIV-positive people, yet few of those utilize new technologies like social media, text messaging, etc. And so our work sought to further explore this topic area by both describing the structure and composition of HIV-positive men's networks in Los Angeles, and we did this using an iPad application that one of our colleagues, Eric Rice, from USC developed, and I'll go a little bit into that methodology because it's an interesting way of collecting social network data quickly and effectively. We wanted to document technology-based communication among HIV-positive men and understand potential methods for innovative HIV treatment adherence interventions. And then we wanted to investigate the moderating effect of social network characteristics on the relationship between depression and treatment adherence. These data were collected in Los Angeles County between March and October of last year. Men were recruited through AIDS service organizations and a UCLA registry for HIV-positive people who are interested in participating in future research. The data collection happened in the community, so participants could elect to be visited at home in the AIDS service organization where he was recruited or at a location convenient to the participant. So it could have been a coffee shop, a place in the community. And all respondents received $20 for participating in the study. We administered a face-to-face social network interview. A trained research assistant met with the participant, and this lasted about 20 to 30 minutes. The way this worked is participants were asked to nominate the other significant people in their networks. And for each person that was nominated, these people are often called alters in the social network literature, we collected their first name and last initial, their age, gender, race, and the length of the relationship. And then questions were asked to assess the quality of that relationship and the type of relationship in more specificity. So the iPad application looks like this. The question asked of the respondent appears at the bottom of the screen, and a map of his social network is populated on the iPad with each alter, each person that they nominate, represented by a square that can be touched upon if that person is meets the question being asked. So who do you talk to or see at least once per week, and then the participant touches the people that they have talked to in the last week. And this has been tested with homeless youth, with HIV-positive men in our study, with HIV-positive women, with military populations, and has been shown to be an efficient way of collecting social network data, which can often be time-intensive and burdensome on participants. In addition to the social network interview, we collected demographic information, and we used the CESD-10 to assess for depressive symptoms. Participants were asked how they felt or behaved during the previous week, and on this scale, scores of 10 or higher represent significant depressive symptoms. For social support, we looked at structural measures of support from the social network maps, thinking about network size, the number of people nominated, and network density, which is the number of ties between the participant and other people in the network divided by all possible ties. And then we also used the multidimensional scale of perceived social support to get a more in-depth look at that construct. Treatment adherence was measured in the following way. Participants were asked if they'd ever missed taking HIV medication, and among those who reported that they had, they were administered the ACTG adherence scale, which is a validated scale for measuring treatment adherence. For our analytic plan, we ran descriptive statistics to document network structure, composition, and technologies used by the men in our study. Then we tested bivariate associations between participant-level characteristics, network-level characteristics, and our main outcome, treatment adherence. And we retained all effects that had a p-value of less than 0.1 for subsequent inclusion in the multivariate analysis, because this was a small study and a pilot study. We used OLS regression to understand the effect of depression on treatment adherence, and then I'll present some of the moderating effects at the end that we looked at in our regression models. Our final sample was 150 men. Mean age was 46, and a very small percentage of the sample were less than 30 years old, which is one of the limitations of our work, because we know that young people continue to be infected with HIV at high rates, and we would have liked to have a younger sample. But I think our community-based recruitment strategy coupled with this registry skewed us into the kind of middle age range. Over 90% indicated that they had had sex with men in the past 6 months. A little over 70% had completed high school, about a fifth were employed, and over half had been diagnosed with AIDS. In terms of the racial ethnic breakdown, here's a pie chart representing the percentage of respondents who fell into each of these categories, just to illustrate that this was the majority racial ethnic minority sample. Other mixed race includes Asian and Native American as well. When we looked at measures of social support, depression, and treatment adherence, the mean network size for participants in our study was about 10. So on average, participants nominated 10 people as part of their social network, although the range was from a single person all the way up to 33. Network density was about 30%. Mean overall perceived social support was 53.3, the range being 12 to 84. So toward the upper middle half of that range. For depression, the mean score was 12.2, and you'll remember that 10 is the cutoff for presence of significant depressive symptoms, so 60% met that criteria. In terms of treatment adherence, almost two-thirds indicated that they'd missed taking HIV medication, and the mean adherence score with higher scores indicating greater adherence was 71, almost 72. So again, kind of middle, upper part of that range. When thinking about the social network composition of the men in our study, about two-thirds of networks on average were made up of friends, about a fifth family members, slightly less than a fifth healthcare professionals like doctor, nurse, case manager, social worker, clergy, romantic partners, and other network members such as acquaintances or coworkers made up smaller percentages of the networks on average. respondents nominated almost 1,500 alters overall. Mean age was similar to that of the participants, and the mean relationship length was about 13 years. Slightly less than half identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and a quarter were identified as HIV positive by the respondent. Respondents indicated that they disclosed their HIV status to about three-quarters of their network, the network, and that a smaller percentages had done instrumental things to help with their adherence, like taken them to a doctor or reminded them to take their HIV medication. When we look at the ways that participants use technology to communicate with their social network members, many communicated by phone, many communicated by text, smaller percentages by video chat or Skype, and about 27% through social media like Facebook or another type of online communication platform. And I think this is also representative of the age group in which we're looking. I think if we'd had a younger sample, we would have probably seen greater percentages indicating text message communication and social media communication. When we ran our bivariate tests of association at the participant level and the network level, we found a few statistically significant effects at that 0.1 cutoff. Age was associated with adherence, in this case actually with younger age being associated with better adherence, which is kind of interesting. For race ethnicity, on average, African American men had lower treatment adherence than their white counterparts, which is something that we've seen in the literature. And depressive symptoms were associated with poor treatment adherence, which has also been well established. In terms of network characteristics, the one effect that came through was having a network member who reminded the participant to take their medication was associated with treatment adherence. So we wanted to explore this a little bit further and think about who these people were who were reminding participants to take their medication. I'm thinking that this pilot work would hopefully inform an intervention. And so a greater proportion of those who reminded participants to take their medication were caseworkers, social workers, agency staff or therapists, doctors or nurses, romantic partners, people who knew about the respondent's HIV status, who talked with the respondent over the computer, who communicated with the respondent at least once a week, and who provided emotional and instrumental support. When we ran our multivariate model, those statistically significant effects were included from the bivariate analyses, and network size was included to account for differences in participants' nominations of network members. Though those effects in age, race, ethnicity, and depression came through, as well as having a network member who reminded participants to take their medication. Based on these findings, we decided to run a moderation analysis and see whether those who have at least one network member who reminded them to take their medication had an effect on the relationship between depressive symptoms and treatment adherence. And this is a graph representing those findings. So those who do not have a network member who reminds them to take their HIV medications are represented by the dotted line, and those who do are represented by the solid line. And you can see the slope is more pronounced among those who do not have a social network member who reminds them to take their medication. So that relationship leading to poor treatment adherence is more pronounced if there isn't that social support that's specifically around treatment adherence. So our thoughts are that these findings provide some important insights for intervention development with HIV-positive men, and especially with HIV-positive racial ethnic minority, MSM, who made up the majority of our sample. There's an emerging body of literature on how social networks can be leveraged with the assistance of technology to improve treatment adherence outcomes. For example, I'm involved in a trial of online social network intervention using Facebook, where participants are assigned to a popular opinion leader group, and then an opinion leader is assigned to that group to push out information, in this case about HIV testing. Other internet platforms like websites have been used to create networks of people to compete against one another on treatment adherence. So these types of technologies are being rolled out, and they rely on social networks that are mostly artificially created. People who enroll in the study to improve their treatment adherence are grouped with others who are non-adherent, or people who are at risk for not, you know, testing for HIV in the case of the prevention trial I mentioned are grouped with others. But we think that the fact that there are already existing social network members who can be leveraged, who are already telling participants about reminding them to take their medications, might be another useful strategy. So 55% of the participants in our study overall had at least one network member who reminded them to take their medications. And as you'll recall, 19% of the network alters reminded participants to take their medication overall. So from our findings, it seems that network members who do this reminding communicate frequently with participants. They provide emotional and instrumental support. They have healthcare knowledge, and they use technology in some way to communicate. And so in terms of thinking about how naturally existing networks might be harnessed to deliver treatment adherence interventions, these are the types of people we might be looking for in naturally existing social networks. Among those individuals who are depressed or who have significant depressive symptoms, treatment adherence outcomes were poorer. And so we know we need to pay particular attention on individuals who have mental health concerns. So in terms of intervention development, screening for depressive symptoms, and then thinking about ways in which social network members might be able to disseminate not only support in terms of treatment adherence, but also support in terms of mental health outcomes would be an interesting direction to go. We know that supportive messaging around mental health can be combined with adherence messaging from other interventions. And so we think that that's one finding that we can take forward. Next steps for our work are to begin taking these data and thinking about social network-based interventions that can be delivered through social media. So Facebook is one platform, but text messaging interventions have become popular. There are many messaging apps now like WhatsApp that are being used more and more with more popularity. And so harnessing those kinds of group texting platforms and allowing for connections between individuals may be another useful avenue for the future. Before ending, I want to acknowledge, again, my co-author, Diane Tan, and the other collaborators from USC and UCLA who worked on this study, which was supported by the UCLA Center for HIV Identification, Prevention, and Treatment Services, which is one of the NIH P30 grants. We also received some support from a small faculty research grant. And the last folks that I'd like to thank are the men who participated in the study, who gave us their time and thoughtfully answered the network interview and these questions to hopefully inform better interventions for treatment adherence among HIV-positive men. Thank you.